All right, good morning, everyone. I have no announcements, just the sheer. All right, with that, let us begin. So we're going to take a little bit of a break this morning from our normal learning and journey through Sefer Tehillim to speak a little bit about Adar. Now, the truth is, not Purim, but Adar. We do have class next week on Shushan Purim. Samir Sashem on Shushan Purim. We're going to focus a bit more on the Megillah. And tonight at 8 o'clock, I'm giving a class in my shul about Megillas Esther. We're going to be focusing on Esther Hamalka. But actually, what I'd like to try to do this morning is something I've never really done in this year before, which is focus a little bit on Chodesh Adar. Adar itself, as we're going to see, the month of Adar has a dramatic identity, not just rooted in Purim. Purim, of course, is a dominant and major piece of Chodesh Adar, but at the end of the days, we're going to see the month of Adar itself has an identity. The truth is, we know this. We know this because, again, of the Mishnah Maseches Tainis, which says, "Mishenichnas Adar marbim besimcha." When the month of Adar enters, then ultimately, again, we rejoice. Now, sometimes we think that the reason we rejoice is because the month of Adar has the Yom Tov of Purim. So it's kind of like the Simcha of Purim that flows in all different directions. That is absolutely true. But as we're going to see, the month itself of Adar also has an identity. There are other months like this. Just like when the Mishnah says, Mishenichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. Those are two sister corollaries. The month of Adar comes, we intensify our Simcha. The month of Av comes, we diminish our Simcha. Why not just wait till Tisha B'Av? Because there's this idea that the month of Av itself has a dramatic emotional overtone that is not just related to the 9th of Av, but fundamentally, you know, almost infiltrates or almost leaves its impression on the month in its entirety. The truth is, you begin to see other months like this also. Nisan is a little bit like this also. So let's focus a bit on the power and on the profundity of Chodesh Adar. Let's take a look at number one. We're going to begin with a section from the Shem Mishmuel. The Shem Mishmuel was the Rebbe of Sakachev. You can see a little bit of his biography over here. Born in 1856, died in 1926. The Shem Yishmuel is perhaps one of the incredibly important svarim in Hasidic literature. So he writes as follows: Kein b'chol shana v'shana, Adar shekodim Nisan, nosnim min ha-shamayim his orus chadasha b'leiv Yisrael. So first of all, this phrase itself is so dramatically beautiful. Every single year when the month of Adar comes, the Adar that precedes Nisan, so there is a spiritual awakening. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down an awakening from above, and that awakening permeates every Jewish heart. But Lev Yisrael, afilu la'osem shahaya b'chalashana b'bechinas shena. This is such a beautiful statement. There are some people who don't just sleep during nighttime hours. There are some people who sleep at night. There are some people who sleep during the day. There are some people who sleep when they're young. There are some people who sleep when they're old. And there are some people who sleep away their entire life. You know, a person could have their eyes wide open, walking around, moving around, but still be in a state of slumber. Right? What is sleep? Sleep is when you are totally unaware of that which is happening around you. That's what happens when you're in a state of slumber. I'm asleep. I don't know what's happening all around me. There are some people who, even when their eyes are open, and they seem to be conscious, they seem to be awake, they seem to be aware, still live life with a total unawareness of anything and everything that is happening all around them. And when you live life in a state of unawareness, you miss out on some of the most dramatic opportunities. You miss out on some of the most incredible moments. So the Shem Yishmuel writes something amazing. The Rebbe says that when the month of Adar comes, there is a spiritual awakening that is showered down upon us from above. And that spiritual awakening is so strong that it is even able to wake up those who are in a state of slumber. Even those who have been sleeping throughout the entire year cannot help but be awakened in Chodesh Adar. Ukimo Shehigid, he quotes his father over here, the Avni Nezer. So listen to this. Sha'adar kodem Nisan, hu ke'en elul kodem Tishrei. I don't know if any of you have ever heard this concept before. This was the first time in my life. I'm not an old man. But the first time in my life that I ever heard this concept. Namely, that Adar, which precedes Nisan, is just like Elul, which precedes Tishrei. Just like Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Yomim Noraim, days of judgment. You don't just walk into days of judgment. You don't just roll into days of judgment. You don't just walk into Yomim Noraim. You prepare. Elul is the month of preparation. So just like Tishrei has its Elul, Nisan, which is a month of rebirth, Nisan, which is a month of renaissance and rejuvenation, Nisan, which is a month of new beginnings, is preceded by its own month of preparation. And that month of preparation is Chodesh Adar. Adar is the Elul of Nisan. Adar is the month of preparation. Rinei B'Tishrei, who's man tefillah v'tachnunim lishpoch es ha'nefesh lefei avinu v'shava shamayim. And just like our Chodesh Tishrei, right, in the month Yomim Noraim, is we pour our hearts out in supplicatory prayer before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Alkein, inyan Elul, shekodem lo, who's man sheniftachin yud gimel mechilin derachamin. So to Chodesh Elul is a time where we begin to recite the Yud Gimel Midos, Hashem Hashem Kaurachu Mechanun. It's a time of unprecedented divine compassion. God makes himself available to us in Chodesh Elul so that we have the ability to repair and address whatever needs to be repaired and addressed. Mach maschas de Hashem umerachim alinu uposeach lanu shari rachamin. Kein dugmaso hu adar lifnei nisan. Incredible, incredible idea. See, the reason it's incredible on a number of levels. First of all, I don't think any of us in our minds would have ever made an association between Adar and Elul. Between Adar and Elul, Elul is such an awesome month. Elul is such a... Somber is the wrong word. It's not somber. It's introspective. It's introspective. Purim itself, again, maybe we'll talk about this more next week. I'm going to talk about this a little bit tonight also. Purim is a very strange Yom Tov on a variety of levels. A profoundly strange Yom Tov that doesn't really seem to compute. And the truth is, if somebody, let's be honest, if somebody were to tell you about this Yom Tov, right, let's say you never heard of Purim before, somebody were to tell you about this Yom Tov, you would say, what would be your reaction? Right? Not Jewish. Not Jewish. Right? There's no way that Jews do stuff like that. Right? That, and when I say stuff like that, dressing up, cross-dressing, which the Shulchan Aruch says is permitted on Purim, which is an Isur D'oraisa, a biblical prohibition throughout the rest of the year. Not just a little bit of drinking, but a lot of drinking, right? The permission to get drunk. Drunkenness is a major, major no-no in Halacha. And again, drunkenness, so it's a strange Yom Tov altogether. It's a very strange Yom Tov. Again, we'll touch on it a little bit later. But the idea that the month of Adar has an Elul-like identity is something that blows our mind. Really? Adar has... You want to tell me that Nisan has like an Elul Tishrei-like identity that I could hear. But that the month of Adar, right? Adar is to Nisan what Elul is to Tishrei. That Adar is a month of preparation. Adar is the month where even if you've been sleeping throughout the entirety of your life, Adar is the month where we wake up. It's a dramatic idea. Shenisan, whose man, the Rebbe goes on, he says, Nisan, who's man chidush avoda, shemispakeshes his amtsus alev, vichios veregesh hanefesh, vishromamos hanefesh, vichizok yadayim, alkin ba'adr shekodim lo, nosnim mina shamayim belev yisrael, omits, vichizok alev, veregesh kodesh, vishromamos hanefesh. So again, I don't want to spend too much time focusing on Nisan right now, because that's not really our focus. But if we'll just take his words, that Nisan is the month where there's this, as we said before, this rebirth, this rejuvenation, this renaissance. Nisan is, remember again, there's a machlokis in the Gemara as to when the world was created. Was the world created in Nisan or was it created in Tishrei? And the answer is we essentially accept both opinions, albeit in different ways. But Nisan is a Rosh Hashanah. Pesach is a Rosh Hashanah. It's a new beginning. It's the birth of our nation. So one has to prepare for this birth. One has to prepare for this renewal. The same way that I have to prepare for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I can't just roll into shul on the first morning of Rosh Hashanah and say, hello, I'm here, I'm ready to repair that which has been done and build a new. It doesn't work. You have to prepare. So too, if you want to really tap in to the rebirth, the rejuvenation, the renaissance of Nisan, that requires a month of preparation in Adar. But we'll leave aside the Nisan piece just a little bit. What I want you to take out from the Rebbe, from the Shem Yishmuel, is this idea that Adar is this month when we are awakened from our slumber. That even if I've been sleeping my entire life, which Rachmana Litzlan, so many of us do. You know, sometimes we think that the worst things we do are the averos we commit. So I have good news and bad news. Right? The good news is, the good news is that's not the worst thing we commit. Meaning, the fact that we sin, everybody sins. Everybody sins. As Shlomo HaMelech writes, in Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Lo Yachta. There's no such thing, even the greatest tzaddik commits mistakes, commits averos. Everyone sins. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed us with all of our frailties and shortcomings. Of course we sin. The greatest sin we commit is when you oversleep. Oversleeping is the greatest avera. Oh, what I mean oversleeping? I mean like there are people who oversleep like 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, a lifetime. People oversleep. People oversleep all of the time. They oversleep decades. Oh, I didn't realize why. Well, when did I turn 50? That's incredible. How did that happen? Right? Wonderful. And they overslept decades of their lives. That's the greatest infraction. For one simple reason. An avera, you could always fix. Lost time, you can never make up for. Right? Anyone ever have this feeling? You know, if you ever actually, like literally, oversleep. Hey, if you oversleep, oversleeping, you wake up, and like even if you feel rested, a little bit of extra rest for the first couple of moments, there's like this pit in your stomach that sets in a moment later. Or at least there should be a pit in your stomach that sets in a moment later. Why? I have so much to accomplish. I have so much to do. I have so much yes, it's nice to be a bit more rested, but at the expense of accomplishment, at the expense of doing something with my life and with my day, it causes anxiety. There's nothing worse in life than oversleeping. It's bad enough if you do it one morning. It's tragic when you do it for decades. And therefore, says the Shem Yishmuel, even if I've overslept so much of life, Adar is the month when I am awakened. And here's the amazing part. Who awakens me? Who awakens me? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. See, sometimes God gets fed up. You know, you ever had this experience sometimes? I mean, everybody, teenage children are very much like this, right? You wake them up, teenage boys especially, right? You wake them up. You try once, right? Okay, I'll come back again. Try again. And then at a certain point in time, what does every single parent say to their teenage son? You're on your own. You know what? I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to overturn your mattress. Right? It's not yeshiva. You know, I'm not going to. I'm just, you're on your own. Now you have to figure it out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us so much that comes every Chodesh Adar and says, you know what? I'm sick and tired of waiting for you to wake up. How long are you going to sleep for? How much rest does one person need? How long are you going to continue to snore your way through life? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I'm tired of waiting for you to wake up. See, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to wake you up myself. And that's Chodesh Adar. There's a Hisorus, there's an awakening that is showered down upon us from above. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, like we say in Elul, Uru Yishenem Mishinaschem, wake up, sleepy ones, from your slumber. There is so much to do. There is so much to accomplish. There is so much to be. Stop sleeping through life. And get up and start doing. Says the Shem Mishmuel, that is the power of Chodesh Adar. To take this a little bit further, take a look at number two. The Belzer Rebbe, actually, again, I'm quoting from a number of Hasidic sources because this theme is very dramatic in Hasidus. I didn't see it really mentioned as much in other sources. I'm sure it appears also in other sources. So we're going to be a little bit heavy on the Rebbes of yesteryear because they really drive home this point. So the Belzer Rebbe says something amazing. He quotes the Pasuk in number three. This, remember, is when Yehuda is speaking to Yaakov Avinu. Right? And Yehuda says, remember, this is just to give you the context. Yosef has not yet revealed his identity to the brothers. Yosef is in Egypt. The brothers come home. The brothers tell Yaakov, we can't get food unless, of course, what? We bring Binyamin with us. Yaakov Avinu is stalling. He does not want his youngest son to accompany the older boys to Egypt for a variety of different reasons. So finally, in a moment of desperation, Yehuda says, listen, we're running out of food. Ki lulei hismamanu ki ato shavnu zepamim. If we had not tarried, ki lulei hismamanu, if we would not have waited so long, ki ato shavnu zepamim, we could have already gone back and forth to Egypt twice. Look what the Belzer Rebbe does with this pasuk. Take a look at number two. Hismanu kata. Look at the middle line, number one, and the first in this. I'm sorry, in the middle of the first line, source number two. Kilule hismamanu, lula osios elul. Lula is elul. So watch this. Shim bechodesh elul hismamanu miloshav b'tshuva. Sometimes ki be'elul hismamanu. Sometimes we have delayed in Chodesh Elul. Sometimes you go through an Elul and I haven't lifted a spiritual finger. I haven't done anything. I go through an Elul and I have not really introspected. I've gone through an Elul and I haven't made the changes. And sometimes I go through a Yamim Noraim and I feel dead on the inside and I'm uninspired and I'm unmoved and I go through the motions, but I do absolutely nothing to move my life forward. Says the Rebbe, sometimes you wait and you don't do anything through Elul, but it's okay. Ki ata shavnu. What does Yehuda say? Ki ata shavnu. Watch this. Anu yecholim loshuv b'tshuva. There's always an opportunity to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When can you come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Ze pa'amayim. Ze, in gematria, the numerical value of ze is 12. Adar is the last month of the year. If you count again the new year from Nisan, right? As I mentioned to you before, Nisan is also a Rosh Hashanah. Nisan is also a beginning. So ultimately, again, Adar is month number 12. So ultimately, again, and not only is Adar month number 12, but Adar is the only month which sometimes can what? Occur twice. Pa'amayim. Pa'amayim. It's the only month that could occur twice. To hear what the Rebbe is saying, look how the Rebbe reads the pasuk. Kilule hismamanu ki adata. I'm sorry, kilule hismamanu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sometimes I waste my elul. Sometimes I waste my elul, my lula, my elul. Sometimes I waste my elul and I don't use it as I should. But nevertheless, do not despair. Ki ata shavnu. There is an opportunity to do tshuva. There's an opportunity to turn ourselves around. There's an opportunity to introspect and remake ourselves or better ourselves in the way that we know we need to do that. And when does that happen? Zeh pa'amayim. It occurs in the month of Zeh, which is the month of Zeh, Gematria Zeh, Zion Hayes, right? 12, the 12th month, which occurs pa'amayim, which could occur twice in the Jewish calendar. Even if I didn't take advantage of my Elul, even if I didn't take advantage of my Tishrei, it's okay. Ki ata shavnu, I'll do tshuva now. When? Zeh pa'amayim. In the month of Adar, the 12th month, which occurs twice. So the Belzer Rebbe building up on this idea. And I think even taking it further. See, the Shem Yishmuel tells us that what Elul is to Tishrei, Adar is to Nisan. That's beautiful. Adar is a month of preparation before the incredible rebirth, rejuvenation, and renaissance of Nisan. Says the Belzer Rebbe, it's even more. Adar is the makeup that even if for some reason I did not utilize my Yomim Noraim, even if for some reason I did not maximize my Elul and my Tishrei, and I would take it a step further. You know, a lot of times we do maximize our Elul. We do maximize our Tishrei. But what state do many of us find ourselves right now? Okay, don't answer. I'll answer it, right? I'm like right back where I started. It's as if I didn't have an Elul and a Tishrei. By the time I'm already up to Adar, again, a lot of times I look at myself and I'm the same person I was last year, Adar Nisan. And so the Belzer Rebbe says that even if for some reason, either you didn't use your Elul and your Tishrei, you could do tshuva now. But even if I did use my Elul, my Tishrei, and just for some reason the glow of the Yamim Noraim is gone, I've like spiritually flatlined and maybe even regressed a little bit. So comes another Elul, comes another Tishrei. Elul and Tishrei occur twice throughout the year. The first time they occur is Elul and Tishrei, and the second time they occur is Adar and Nisan. Adar is the month of tshuva. Adar is the month of introspection. Adar is the month where HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers down that blessing upon us, wakes us up from our life slumber, and reminds us that we can be more. That we need to take a look at ourselves, how we're living, what we're doing, how we're operating day to day, and how we could just make things just a little bit better. Whether you utilized your Yamim Noraim or didn't utilize your Yamim Noraim, Adar is here, and Adar gives us the opportunity to do all of the tshuva we want and to remake ourselves into the people we know we can be. If you look at number four, the Itav Lev. The Itav Lev was the Rebbe of Sziget, which was Romania, Hungary, depending. The Itav Lev was the grandfather of the Satmar Rav, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So the Itav Lev writes as follows, so beautifully. He says, Yadua, Benisan Nigalu, Ubenisan Asidin Ligoel. We know that we were redeemed in Nisan, and Mashiach, Emir Hashem, is going to come once again in Nisan. V'yadua, ki ein hadavar talui ela b'tshuva. But we know again, the only way Mashiach comes is with tshuva. Mashiach only comes if there's tshuva. U'kvar isa b'svarim. So watch this. So okay, so that's a principle he's espousing. Right? In order for Mashiach to come, although that in of itself, you know, there's a machlokes in the Gemara as to what exactly brings Mashiach. Do we have to do tshuva? Or is there just kind of like an expiration date? At which point, if Mashiach has not arrived by this date, he has, quote unquote, no choice but to arrive. Okay, so that's a fundamental messianic machlok, which I'm not going to get into now. But let's go with the idea like the Rebbe is espousing over here, that we experienced historical redemption in the month of Nisan Pesach, and we will once again experience messianic redemption in Pesach as well. And we know that redemption must be preceded by tshuva. Watch this. Ukvar isa b'svarin, ki b'tishrei me'emas hadin tavhil, v'atshuva hi miyira. Ve'elul hukva mikodem, lis'orer b'tshuva al yedei shofar. Ubenisan, I'm just going to read two more lines and we'll explain. Ubenisan, zman tshuva, me'ahava. Al yedei shezocher chas de Hashem v'nisa v'niflos, shasu imana b'altziyam v'mitrayim, ולכן הוקווה אדר מקודם לסעור בתשובה מתוך שמחה ואהבה. כי מי שנכנס אדר, מרבן בשמחה. So the Yitav Lev. The Yitav Lev comes along. It's very soothing. Very soothing. Very nice. No, chas shalom. Nice. So the Yitav Lev explains so beautifully that he's building on the previous sources. Now that we've established ultimately again that Adar is the month where HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers divine energy upon us and awakens us. Even if I've been sleeping through life, Adar is the month that I awake. Right? According to the Shem Yishmuel, what Elul is to Tishrei, Adar is to Nisan. The Belz Rebbe takes that a step further. It's not just that they're similar. It's just that in the event that either I didn't use my Elul Tishrei or I used it, but the effects have worn off, Adar represents another opportunity to do tshuva, to come back, to reawaken, and to reignite my spark. Says the Yitav Lev, taking this a step further. But there's a difference. There's a difference between the tshuva of Adar and the tshuva of Elul. What's the difference, says the Yitav Lev? The difference he explains so beautifully is that Elul, the tshuva is a tshuva meyira. Now, we'll just translate these phrases right now. We'll explain them a bit better in just a moment. A tshuva that is motivated by fear, or a tshuva that stems from fear, versus, ultimately, in Adar, it is a tshuva me'ahava. A tshuva that is motivated by a love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the truth is, these two constructs of tshuva already go back to the Gemara. So again, we're going to define them right now. So what the Yitav Lev is doing for us is up until now, the Shem Yishmo and the Belzer Rebbe, we're both kind of focusing on the similarities between Adar and between Elul. The Yitav Lev says, yes, there is incredible similarity, but one dramatic distinction. The tshuva of Elul is a tshuva meyira, a tshuva out of fear. And the tshuva of Adar is a tshuva me'ava, a tshuva of love. The Sfas Emes, the Gereba also highlights this idea, number 5. He says, Elul kodem bechinas Rosh Hashanah yira. So Elul, before Rosh Hashanah, is tshuva meyira. Va'adar kodem Nisan, shugam kein Rosh Hashanah. And Adar, which comes before Nisan, and Nisan, as we said before, is also Rosh Hashanah. Zman tshuva mitoch ava v'simcha unedivus la'Hashem yisbarach. So whereas the tshuva of Elul is a tshuva miyira, a tshuva motivated from fear, the tshuva of Adar is a tshuva me'ahava, a tshuva of love. So let's talk about these two categories of tshuva for just a moment. So remember again, these constructs of tshuva me'ahava, tshuva miyira, already go back to the Gemara Maseches Yuma. The Gemara brings this down in two different contexts. The truth is, we'll skip number 6 for just a moment and focus on number 7 because this is the more well-known example. So the Gemara says as follows: Amrei Shlakish, Gidola Tshuva, Shezedonos and Naas Islo Kishgagos. So Reish Lakish says, Tshuva is great. Why? Because ultimately, again, even intentional Averos can be made into unintentional Averos. That if a person commits an Avera intentionally and then does Tshuva, the power of tshuva is the ability to transform my intentional avera into an unintentional avera. Shene Amar, Shuva Yisrael Hashem Elokecha, Ki Kashata Bavonecha. So skip a little bit to the middle of the first line, second line. Ini, is that so? V'amreish Lakish, Gidova Tshuva Shezedonos, Naas Islo Kizichuyos. So the Gemara makes it sound like that the incredible power of tshuva is the ability to transform intentional averos into what? Into unintentional averos. The Gemara says, but there's even a stronger ability. The stronger ability is gedola tshuva, shezedonos naasislo kizichuyos. Right? In fact, tshuva is even more powerful. That tshuva has the ability, listen to this, to take your intentional averos and to transform them into mitzvos. Dramatic. Into mitzvos. Right, so you thought tshuva was great, that it has the ability to transform your intentional averos into unintentional averos. In fact, it's even stronger. Tshuva has the ability to transform your intentional averos into mitzvos. So the Gemara says, so which one is it? So what's the power of tshuva? Does tshuva only have the ability to transform the intentional into unintentional? Or does tshuva have the ability to transform intentional actually into mitzvos? To which the Gemara says, last line, number 7, Lokashya, it's not a contradiction. Kan me'ava, kan mira. The Gemara says two different forms of tshuva. When a person does tshuva me'ira, tshuva out of fear, tshuva me'ira has the ability to transform one's intentional averos into unintentional averos. But ultimately, again, tshuva me'ava, a tshuva that is motivated from love, that is even more powerful and has the ability to transform even intentional averos into mitzvos. The pashat pshat, the simple understanding, is what is tshuva meyira, tshuva me'ava? Very simple. What's tshuva meyira? It's a tshuva that is motivated out of fear. Fear of what? Punishment. Simple. You know, if there is one truth in Yiddishkeit, it is that every action has a reaction. Right? That's not Einstein who came up with it. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Every action has a reaction. Every single thing you do in this world generates a reaction from above. That is the theory of relativity, is not a theory, right? At the end of the day, it is correct. It is a fact. At the end of the day, everything you do generates a response. So if I commit an avera, there is always what? There is always what? There is always an onesh. There is always a punishment. That is the way that it works. So the greatness of tshuva is that if a person does tshuva, they're able to go ahead and remove the onesh. So if I go and I do tshuva, I don't want to get patched. I don't want to get punished. I don't want to suffer the consequences of my avera. So therefore, I choose to do tshuva. It's not an altruistic tshuva. It's a self-serving tshuva. It's utilitarian tshuva. I'm repenting. I'm changing. And again, I'm sincere. I'm being very upfront about why I'm doing it. I don't want to get punished. I recognize that every action has a reaction. I've done a whole bunch of averos, which means that there's a whole bunch of punishments waiting for me. I don't want that. And therefore, I do tshuva. That's called tshuva meyira. A tshuva motivated out of a fear. And the Gemara says, does such a tshuva work? Yeah, absolutely. By the way, not only does it work, it's actually quite profound. It has the ability to take intentional sins and transform them into unintentional sins. That's quite dramatic. That is quite a dramatic thing if you think about it. But then there's a higher level. The higher level is what we call a tshuva me'ahava. A tshuva me'ahava. So an ahava, a love of what? Love of what? Or love of who? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it appears, simple understanding is, in this level of tshuva, I am changing, repenting, going through the process of tshuva. But not because I'm looking to save myself from punishment. I should say differently. Not because the avoidance of punishment is the motivating factor for my change in life. It's because I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I love the Ribono Shel Olam, and I recognize that my sinful activity creates a chasm, creates a distance between myself and my Father. And I want to be close to my Father. I want to be close to my God. I want a loving, beautiful, passionate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And sin prevents that from occurring. I'm not worried about the punishment. That's not my... I'm worried about the punishment. But that's not the motivation for my tshuva. The motivation for my tshuva is I'm so in love with my God. I'm so in love with my God. And I realize that my actions have created a distance between myself and my Creator. I don't want that distance. I don't want that distance. It's almost like, you know, if a couple has a fight, they have a disagreement. So, right? So someone has to go ahead and be the big boy or girl and reconcile. Reconcile. So why do people reconcile? Why do people reconcile? So people can reconcile for a whole variety of reasons. There are utilitarian reasons to reconcile. There's something I want from my spouse, or there's something I need from my spouse, and I can't ask for it, or I can't expect it without reconciliation. That's like tshuva meyira. It's true, that it's correct, and it makes sense. And there's a higher level. I want to reconcile with my spouse because this is my marriage, this is my life. And I don't want there to be a distance between myself and my spouse. I love her. I love him. I want us to be together. So I don't want to live in a state of disrepair or a state or in a disjointed state. So the same thing applies to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's tshuva meyira, where at the end of the day I do tshuva because I don't want to get punished. I'm looking to avoid the repercussions of my actions, and so I do tshuva. And then there's tshuva me'ava, my focus. Thank you. Thank you. And then there's tshuva me'ava. Thank you. And tshuva me'ava says, I'm looking to remove the distance. I just want to be close to you again. And so I'm going to repent. I'm going to fix. I'm going to address all the different things that are holding me back in order to come closer to you. If you look at number 9, the Maharal has a beautiful interpretation here. Actually, this is in the, you know, this is in the Rav Hartman version with the footnotes. So he writes over here, this is in the Sivat Shuvah. So just so you understand, in this particular section in Perek Beis, so the Maharal is discussing the concepts of Tshuva Me'ava and Tshuva Me'ira. So if you look in the middle, this is footnote number 65. If you look in the middle over here, about 3 lines in, so he quotes... Rav Hartman quotes from Rav Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Ubesefer Azikar Lamaran Balapachad Yitzchak, Amud Shin Memhe Isa. So Rav Hutner gives what I think is an incredible definition, a new definition of Tshuva Me'ava and Tshuva Me'ira. Look what he writes. I'm in number 9, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines in to the source, first word on the line. Omek HaHevdel, Ben Kocha Shal HaYira, Uben Kocha Shal HaAva. The fundamental difference between Tshuva Me'ava and Tshuva Me'ira is as follows. Hu bazeh sheshu shamaral ki makor hayira hu bahakrecha, excuse me, hu bahakara shall otsam, sorry, shall otsam hi bahakara shall otsam haflaos vahaflagos havdala asher ben hagavra uben yotsro kiviyacho. Listen to this definition. Says the Maral, tshuva meyira stems from when I realize how short I have fallen. I've fallen so short. I have not lived up to my expectations of myself, to the expectations that God has for me. I have not measured up. That Lashon is so profound. He says, ultimately again, Tshuva Meira is sparked when I realize how far away I am from God. Right? My job is to make myself in the image of God. That's my job. And I realize how short I've fallen. That has not materialized. I am not in the image of God. Or at least, I am not as in the image of God as I should be. And the knowledge that I have fallen so short, and the knowledge that ultimately, again, I don't measure up, is so profoundly hard and hurtful to ingest. But what it does do is, it sparks a process of tshuva. I have to now bridge that gap. I now have to go ahead and look a bit more like my Creator. Watch this. Ve'ilu mekora shala'ava. But what's tshuva shala'ava? Hu b'ha'akara hafachis shel dimui hatzur liyotzro. Ve'gama adam nivra b'tzelem elokim. V'chiyesh tzad hekesh b'ina adam lekono. Mahu af ata. Midas ha'ira mischay. So watch this. So says the Ma'arau. So ultimately, what's tshuva me'ava? Tshuva me'ava is when I recognize that I look so much like my Creator. But if I try just a little bit harder, I could be even greater. See, hear the Ma'aral's distinction here. Tshuva me'ira, a tshuva that stems from fear, or really almost a better word is disappointment. I look at who I am, and I realize, my gosh, I have fallen so short from the mark. I'm so far away from where I need to be. I am supposed to be at Tzelem Elokim. I'm supposed to be in the image of God. I'm supposed to be someone special, someone holy. And I'm not that person. Now, the beauty of Tshuva Meira says what? A lot of times people say that to themselves. And then what happens afterwards? What happens afterwards? Nothing happens afterwards. Because a person becomes so despondent and a person becomes so sad that a person gives up on themselves. So Tshuva Meira begins with these feelings of despondency, these feelings of sadness. I am supposed to look like my Creator. But when I look in the mirror, I don't see anything divine. I have fallen so short of the mark. I so don't measure up to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of me. But I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to throw in the towel. Instead, what am I going to do? I'm going to redouble my efforts and try even harder. That's Tshuva Meira. I fear the person I see in the mirror. I fear that person. I don't want to be that person. Or I'm tired of being that person. I'm tired of sleeping. I'm tired of underperforming. I'm tired of never crossing finish lines or seeing my dreams materialize. I'm tired of being tethered to mediocrity. I'm tired of not looking like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not going to give up, but I'm upset. I'm upset. I'm disenfranchised from myself. I'm disappointed in myself. I fear that the person looking back at me is going to be the same person who's going to look back at me until 120. I don't want that anymore. That's Tshuva Meira. Tshuva Me'ava is just the opposite. I look in the mirror and I say, you're great. You're great. You're doing a great job. I'm living the life I need to be living. I'm doing the things I need to be doing. I'm accomplishing, I'm growing, but there is still more to do. I see how much I already look like my Creator. I see how much I already look like my Father. But if I put in just a bit more effort, if I try just a little bit harder, if I tweak just a couple of things here and there is no telling what I could become. Tshuva Meira is a tshuva that is motivated and sparked by a feeling of disappointment that I've fallen short and that I don't look like my Father. Tshuva Me'ava is a tshuva that is sparked by an excitement of all the wonderful things I'm doing, how much I really resemble my Father. But if I just change a couple of small little things and tweak a number of smaller things, there is no telling who I can become and what I can accomplish. If we take a look at number 10, so the way that the Ma'aral understood this was as follows. So how does a person ultimately, again, resemble HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So, right, so the idea in the Tshuva Me'ava model is the way a person gets to a level of divine resemblance. How do you resemble the divine? Through what we call divine emulation. by mimicking that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, then ultimately, again, I become divine. So in Tshuva Me'ava, a person looks in the mirror and they say to themselves, wow, I really emulated my father. I really followed in his ways. I really engaged in divine emulation. And that's why, Baruch Hashem, I feel like I'm in a good place. But I need to be better. I need to try harder. I need to lift myself up a little bit more. Divine emulation is how a person gets to the level of Tshuva Me'ava, and how a person in general grows life. In general, we won't. How do you know in life, like, what to do and what not to do? Right? How do you know in life what to do? So there's a phrase by other religions, which we should begin to use also. You know, like, what would God do? Right? So other religions fill in other names over there. But it's a very powerful thing. What would God do? What would God do in this situation? Or for us, the better statement is, what would God want me to do in this situation? So take a look at number 10. The Gemara of Masechet Sota says something amazing. What is the meaning when the pasuk says that you should follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your God? So the Gemara says, is it really possible for a person to walk in the footsteps of God? Valokvar Namar, the pasuk already says that God is an all-consuming fire. So rather, what does it mean? Elo lahalich achar midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, what it means is emulate the attributes of God. Divine emulation is the secret for growth. The Gemara says, Mahu ma'bisharumim, just like God clothes the naked as he did for Adam and Chava, af atah bisharumim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu biker cholim, God did biker cholim, he visited Avram Avinu, so to you do biker cholim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu nichem avelim, God consoled mourners, as he did when he visited Yitzchak after the death of Avram, you console mourners. God buries the dead, as he did with Moshe Rabbeinu, so you bury the dead as well. In other words, the secret to life success is divine emulation. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, that's why the Torah is filled with so much information that when you look at it, doesn't seem to be all that necessary. It's because embedded in those details is HaKadosh Baruch Hu modeling for us. By the way, isn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu the ultimate parent? Every parent knows that if you want to teach your child something, right, what do? Model it, right? Don't talk about it, because the truth is your kids probably won't listen anyway. Don't talk about it. Model it. Model it. Whatever you model for your children, whether they follow suit or not, but they will know what your values are, not based on what you say, but based ultimately on what you do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu modeled that for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu models all of these incredible behaviors to teach us, this is what I want from you. This is what I want you. So let's string this back. So remember again, we have two models of tshuva, right? The model of tshuva, meyira, according to the Maharal, is I look in the mirror, I'm unhappy with who I see. I've fallen short. I'm afraid of the person I have become. I don't want to be that person, and that pushes me into high gear for dynamic accomplishment to change myself. Tshuva me'ava is such a beautiful tshuva. I'm happy with who I am. I'm doing good. I'm trying hard. I'm pushing myself. But what? I know I need to do more. I resemble my father, but I need to resemble him even more through how? Divine emulation. So divine emulation is the secret for growth. When you emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ultimately, again, raises you spiritually. In the event that you fall, that sparks tshuva me'ava. And ultimately, again, tshuva me'ava. So how do you do tshuva me'ava? It's more divine emulation. It's more divine emulation. So what does this have to do with Chodesh Adar and Purim? So watch this. You know, it's interesting. I always found it intriguing. So this Gemara Masechet Sota is a famous Gemara, what we call the Mahu Af Ata Gemara. Just like God does it, so too we should do it. This is the concept of divine emulation. So I've always felt that the Chazal could have included something else. What I think, obviously I'm wrong because Chazal didn't include it, but okay, you'll humor me a little bit. But there is a piece of divine emulation that is so dramatic. The most dramatic piece of divine emulation is the opening pasuk in the Torah, number 11. Bereshis bara Elokim es hashamayim ve'es haaretz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. And herein lies one of the most important pieces of divine emulation, which is just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created his world, so we must take ownership and responsibility over our lives and create our world as well. You know, the fundamental question that everyone has on the Genesis narrative, on Ma'aseh Bereishis, Rashi already quotes it. Rashi doesn't understand why it's there. Why is the whole creation story even included? We don't understand it anyway. We don't really understand it, right? We don't know what 7 days means. It certainly doesn't mean seven 24-hour days. Time is a human construct. So it doesn't mean 7 days. But it could mean billions, millions, whatever it means. I don't understand. What does it mean that God created something from nothing? Human mind can't comprehend that. We could create something big from something small, or we could take something big and reduce it down to its smallest elements. But the notion of creating something from nothing defies human comprehension. So we don't understand the story. So if we don't understand the story, then why is it included? The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says something so beautiful. The Baal Shem Tov says because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is modeling for us how to create our own world. How do you create your life? So lesson number one, Rome wasn't built in a day, the universe wasn't created in a day, and your life is not going to be fashioned in a day. It took HaKadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol, whatever it was, 7 days. So whether that means billions of years, millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years, or 7 days, whatever it means that HaKadosh, now God could have created the entire universe in how long? Less in a fraction of time so small that we can't even measure it. Yet he intentionally chose to create over 7 days, because to create the life you want for yourself takes time. Takes time. Next lesson. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created light, but then Rashi HaKadosh says, what does he do after created light? What does he do? He goes ahead and he withdraws the light, or withdraws part of the light. He says, this light is too good for Olam Hazeh, for this world. He saves it for the tzaddikim in the world to come. Kadosh Baruch Hu, what? You didn't like read ahead? You know, you didn't know this is going to happen? Kadosh Baruch Hu teaches us an incredible lesson, that sometimes in life you have to learn how to pivot. Right? Sometimes plans that look really good right now, and plans that seem correct right now, don't turn out so well. Find the courage to pivot. Find the courage to change. Just because this was the plan now, if you see that it doesn't work, learn to adjust. Lesson number three. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates his crown jewel of creation, Adam and Chava. And how long does Gan Eden last for? A couple of hours. Whatever hours mean. A couple of hours, right? And then suddenly, everything comes undone. A lot of times in life, life doesn't follow your plan. But don't give up when things don't go your way. The most profound piece of divine emulation is Bereshis Bara Elokim Es Hashomayim V'Es Haaretz. Mahu Af Ato. Just like God creates the world, we, each of us, are the creators of our worlds. We must take responsibility for creating our world, for creating our life. Do you know what the greatest sin that people often commit is? They outsource the building of their lives to other people, right? This one needs to do this. This one needs to do that. No one is the creator of your world except you. Everyone else in your life is part of the supporting cast, right? They're the supporting actors and actresses. There's only one star. There's only one star in your show, and that's you. There's only one creator in your universe. Of course, you don't understand. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in just a moment. But that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is modeling for us. I created my world by myself, God says to us. You take the reins of your life. You take the reins of your world. Mahu af ato. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, so too ultimately we must take responsibility to be the sole creators of our world. And in fact, take a look at number 12. Reb Tzadik says, this is a very well-known concept in Megillas Esther. The Chazal perishu zeh asod b'masha amru. Komakom shenemar hamelech stam. The Megillas Esther. The melech malchei hamlochim akosov medaber. We know that ultimately, again, whenever you see the word Hamelech In the Megillah, Reb Tzadik says, according to Zohar, HaMelech is always a veiled reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, in the storyline, the Melech is always referring to Achashverosh. And remember, it's not by accident that God's name is not mentioned in the Megillah. But says the Zohar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is mentioned in the Megillah. Every single time you see HaMelech, not HaMelech HaKashverosh, but just HaMelech, that is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why is God embedded in the Megillah? Because at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the architect of all of the events of the Megillah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is not there. His identity is not pronounced. His identity is obscured and hidden. But he is there, nevertheless, pulling the strings, choreographing all of the events one after the other. But what is the real story of Megillas Esther? You know, if you think about it, it's so strange. If I were to ask you, what's the impact that the Purim story has on our lives to this very day? What would you say? How does Purim impact us as a people, as a nation to this day? It doesn't. If you want to get lofty and spiritual, it doesn't. Meaning, there's so much stuff that has happened between Shushan and Baltimore, right? A lot of stuff. And the truth is, some of it good, a lot of it tragic. So it's great. The Jews of Shushan were saved. And by the way, what about all the time that the Jews weren't saved? What about all of the times, less than 100 years ago, when Jews weren't saved? It's great. It's fantastic. It's a beautiful story. Wonderful. What about all the times that there wasn't a victory? What about all the times where there wasn't a Mordechai and Esther? Or what about times where there were Mordechai and Esther, but they weren't able to do anything for Klal Yisrael? What do we do about that? And not only that, it always struck me. I'm going to speak about this more tonight in my Megillas Esther share. It has always struck me. I have a very difficult time at the end of the Megillah. The Megillah ends, right? And I don't mean the ending of the Megillah. The ending of the Megillah is strange also, because it just ends off with a discussion about taxes. I mean in a more dramatic way. Right, the Megillah ends, Shoshanas Yaakov, I'm not going to sing it, but Tzahala V'Sameicha, everybody's happy. And isn't it amazing that everybody's happy except who? Esther and Mordechai. The hero and the heroine of the story, I'm sure they're happy that they pulled off a salvation. Esther is forever locked in a marriage that she did not choose to a man who she had absolutely nothing in common with. Just so you understand, it's not the pshat that Achashverosh was just like not a nice guy. I mean this, and again, just so you understand, Achashverosh had slept with most of the women in his country. You're talking about a man who was just like a pit of depravity and immorality. What kind of self-respecting woman would ever just want to be with a man like that? Be associated with a man like that? I don't mean like they didn't have, you know, common life goals or aspirations. Like they had different hashkafas, I don't think we're hashkafically on the same page. Yeah, that's definitely true. But there's a couple of things a bit more acute than differing hashkafas over here. Esther, beautiful, innocent, holy Esther Hamalka is locked in a life not of her own choosing. Ain't tragedy gedola mizo, right? Is there anything more heartbreaking than at the end, everybody's dressing, everybody's happy, everybody's having their Purim Suda, and Esther Hamalka looks out the window from her palace, which has become her life prison and her life sentence, and that's all it is. And Mordechai, whether Esther was Mordechai's niece or was his wife, or both, remember, they're not mutually exclusive. Mordechai, who has now an exalted position in the kingdom as well, goes every day to work. And who does he see? His beloved Esther. He sees his beloved Esther. Can you imagine the pain of a life like that? Mordechai and Esther, two people who loved each other, had tried to build a life together, forever separated. Both of them consigned to roles that they would never. And I remember Esther as a child with Achashverosh. Darius, who was actually very good to the Jewish people, allowed for the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. There's an incredible amount of good. So it's striking about the Megillah is that the Megillah is not like a feel-good story. It's really not. I mean, we think it's a feel-good story because at the end of the Megillah, everything works out okay for us. Just not for the hero and the heroine. Just not to hear that. So what is the message of the Megillah? So perhaps the entire story of the Megillah were people, about it was a story of people who engaged in divine emulation. The greatness of Mordechai and Esther is that they are people who chose to shape their circumstances. They did not choose their circumstances, because often in life you cannot choose your circumstances. But they created a world. They created a life. They shaped circumstances based on the circumstances which were handed to them. You know, I speak about this every year by Purim, because to me it's the most dramatic part of the Megillah. I spoke of this in a different context as well. You know, when Mordechai comes to Esther and he sends her a message, and he sends her the message, you know, Haman's going to kill the Jews. Haman's going to kill the Jews. You need to go to the king. You need to supplicate on behalf of our people. And what does Esther respond to Mordechai? Right, so she says no. She really does, I mean, she doesn't say no straight out. You know, sometimes when you ask someone for something, and you know they're saying no, but they give you a whole Torah, right? She's going to say, just say no. Just save us, if you can't do it, you can't do it, right? Says to Mordechai, well, you know, if you go to the king uninvited, you're risking your life. I haven't been called to the king. So Esther, and again, for Esther, going to the king willingly brought with it a whole other series of complications as well. But Esther essentially says no. And Mordechai says to Esther, what is the matter with you? Why could very well be that this is your moment? Our job in life, what is our job in life? Our job in life is mahu avata, divine emulation. God created a world, and it is our job to create our world as well. The difference is that God gets to choose the materials with which he creates our world. We often don't get to choose the materials. Instead, the materials, the building blocks for our creation, for our world, are given to us. Here are your building blocks, and those building blocks come in the form of circumstances, of situations. Here are your building blocks. Go out and build something with it. That's our job. Mahu afata, divine emulation. So Mordechai says to Esther, my beloved Esther, have you forgotten what our mission is in this world? Our mission is divine emulation. Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim v'ha'aretz. God built the world. And our job is to build our world. Esther, you are in a position to build, and you must do so. You are in a position to build. Here are the circumstances. Here are the materials. Go out and build something. Go out and build something. And perhaps, if we loop this all the way back, we can now begin to understand a little bit of the Simcha of Adar. The Simcha of Adar, as we saw beforehand. I'm sorry, before we get to the Simcha of Adar, now you could appreciate the greatness of Mordechai and Esther. The greatness of Mordechai and Esther is that they became the architects of their worlds. Sometimes the world you have to build is not necessarily the world you would have liked to have lived in, but it's the world you have to build nevertheless. Mordechai and Esther were given the great privilege of building a world for themselves and for their people. It was never a world they would have chosen, but it was a world for which the materials they received, and they found the courage to build it. The greatness, the happiness of the Megillah is not a happiness. You know, I know that I'm going over time, but the happiness of the Megillah, I'll just finish with this. You know, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says that in the world of literature, there are two different types of literary works. There's mythology and there are fairy tales. You know, if you ever read Greek mythology, so every Greek myth is the same thing, right? Man planned, and the gods, for some unexplained reason, just pulled the rug out from under them. And every fairy tale always ends, and everyone lived happily ever after. So Rabbi Sacks posits very beautifully that in Judaism we have neither myths, because we don't believe in a God who pulls the rug out from under us. We believe in a God who supports us and holds us and builds us up every step in the way. But we have no fairy tales. We do not have one story that ends and everyone lived happily ever after. I should rephrase that. We will have one story that ends and everyone lived happily ever after. That's the story of Mashiach. But until that point in time, none of our stories end. So the message of the Megillah is not, and everyone lived happily ever after, Shoshanas Yaakov Tzahala V'Samecha. That's not the message of Megillah Esther. The message of Megillah Esther is divine emulation. Find the courage to be the architect of your world. find the courage to live a life of Bereshis Bar Elokim as Hashomayim V'es Haaretz. Find the courage in life to take the building materials you have been given and to construct the best possible universe you can in the circumstances you have. Let's loop back here with this, I will conclude. And perhaps this is the simcha of Adar. So remember, again, we saw that Adar has this incredible simcha. Adar is to Nisan what Elul is to Tishrei, but even more than that, Adar is the month. Adar is the month where even if you missed out on Yamim Noram, you missed out on your Elul, you missed out on your Tishrei, then at the end of the day, you still have Adar. What's the power of Adar? Like the Sasem has said, like the Yitav Lev said, that Adar is the month ultimately of Tshuva Shel Ava. Right? Tshuva Me'ava. And Maral said, what's Tshuva Me'ava? Tshuva Me'ava is when I have a recognition that I resemble my father. And if I just engage in a bit more divine emulation, there is no telling what I can become. And herein lies the simcha of Adar. Misha nichnas Adar marbim besimcha. It is true. This entire month does in fact gain its simcha from the Megillah, from Purim. And what is the simcha of Purim? The simcha of Purim is not that we were saved. Yes, it was that we were saved. But there have been so many other stories where we weren't saved that it's strange to celebrate one that we have been saved. The simcha of Purim is the simcha of the ability for people to go ahead and become the architects of their world. It's the simcha of Purim. Is the simcha of Bereshis Bar Elokim es Hashomayim v'es Haaretz. The ability to take the circumstances that have been given to you and to create and to construct a beautiful and magnificent universe for yourself based on them. And now we understand. The month of Adar, what is Elul? What is Tshuva? Tshuva is where you stop being a victim. People go through life with like a victimization mindset. I haven't self-actualized, and I'm going to tell you why. I've spoken about this before. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you all the people who are at fault for my non-self-actualization. I'll give them to you in alphabetical order. I'll give them to you in chronological order. I'll give them to you in those who have hurt me from greatest to least to greatest, whatever you want. And amazingly enough, on that entire list of people who are responsible for my non-self-actualization, there's always one name that's missing. Mine. At the end of the day, if you don't become the person you want to become, there's only one person who has responsibility for that, and that's you. No one else is to blame for what you do or what you don't do in life. Take responsibility for who you are, for what you are, and for what your life is, and for what your life is not. And the moment you do that is the moment you become divine. You see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say, I wanted the land to be like this, but the land was that. Whose fault is it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen, I'm the creator. I'm the creator of the universe. The buck stops with me. What is beautiful is because I made it beautiful. And what doesn't work, by the way, including us, is also HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fault, kiviyachol, to a certain degree. The simcha of Purim, and therefore by extension the simcha of Adar, and the tshuva of Adar, is the tshuva me'ava. The story of Purim, again, is a story of people who took the building materials they had, engaged in divine emulation, and built a world, built the reality to the best of their ability. The avod of Chodesh Adar is tshuva. In Elul, the tshuva is, I've fallen so short. I have to reconstruct myself. In Adar, I haven't fallen short. Adar is a time to focus on what's working. Adar is a time to focus on what's good. Adar is a time to focus on your accomplishments, on the beauty that each of us possesses. But I realize how beautiful I am, and realize I could be even more beautiful. And how can I be more beautiful? By engaging in divine emulation. And what is the highest form of divine emulation? One simple phrase. Bereshis bara Elokim es ha-shamayim ve-sa-aretz. God creates His worlds. And we must learn to do the same. Adar is the month, through the inspiration of the Megillah, where we say to ourselves, let's take ownership over our lives. Let's take ownership over our worlds. It's true. Often things don't materialize the way we wanted it for a variety of different reasons. And sometimes it's because of other people. But so much of successful living is just taking the materials that life gives you, the materials that your circumstances afford you, and build the best, build the holiest, build the most spiritual, luminescent world you can with the materials you have. That's what Mordechai and Esther Hamalka did for not just the Jews of Shushan. That's why Purim is our Yom Tov to this very day. We don't simply celebrate the salvation of Jews thousands of years ago. It's a good reason for celebration also. We celebrate the courage of two people to become the architects of their lives and the architects of their worlds. And they inspire us during this month of Adar to look inside of ourselves, to introspect. Not a tshuva meira, not a tshuva because I feel like I've fallen so short. I'm doing great, but I could be even greater. And my greatness lies in my willingness to pick up the hammer, to pick up the boards, to pick up the building materials, and to build something great. Mordechai and Esther did it. And may we be Zochem Yeretz Hashem to find the courage to do the same.